Okay. You all follow with me. Pledge of allegiance. Place your hand over your heart and repeat after me. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. Can we have a roll call, please?
Commissioner Bentz.
Present.
Commissioner Colomarino.
Present.
Commissioner Schmidt.
Yes.
Commissioner Ward.
Here.
Commissioner Sturdivant.
Here.
Vice Chairperson Moreno.
Here.
And Chairperson Jack.
Here.
All present.
Thank you. Could I have a motion for approval of the agenda, please?
Move approval of the agenda.
Second.
Commissioner Benz has moved the approval of agenda. Commissioner Sturdivant has seconded. Can I have a roll call, please?
Commissioner Benz?
Yes.
Commissioner Sturdivant?
Yes.
Commissioner Schmidt?
Yes.
Commissioner Colomarino?
Yes.
Commissioner Ward?
Yes.
Vice Chairperson Moreno?
Yes.
And Chairperson Jack?
Yes.
Motion passes 7-0.
Thank you. This is the time for public comment, and seeing no one here in the audience, we'll close public comment and move on to Planning Commission business. Any commissioners with anything they want to bring? Okay. Consent calendar.
Move approval of the minutes.
Second.
Commissioner Benz moving for approval of the minutes, second by Commissioner Colomarino. I have a vote, please.
Commissioner Benz?
Yes.
Commissioner Colomarino?
Yes.
Commissioner Sturdivant?
Yes.
Commissioner Ward?
Yes.
Commissioner Schmidt?
I will abstain. I was excused that night.
Vice Chairperson Moreno?
Yes.
Chairperson Jack?
Yes.
Motion passes 6-0 with one abstention.
Okay, thank you. Next item on the agenda falls under public hearing and would be a report by staff relative to the citywide zone text update. I think, Kelly, you're going to do this? Okay.
Good evening, commissioners. Tonight we're going to see a zone text change. Staff is proposing a text amendment to portions of the Planning and Zoning Ordinance, Title IX of the Municipal Code. These are minor amendments, and they're being proposed for consistency and clarification. The main goals here are to streamline the permit process, aid dormant projects with the permitting process, provide economic development opportunities, and to follow the recommendations of ADE, the city's economic development consultant, and to fix inconsistencies throughout the zoning ordinance. And this is something that we had talked about at one of our previous meetings, that there are many inconsistencies throughout the code, so we're just trying to clean some of those up. There are six proposed updates that we're looking at tonight. The first one is an extension of conditional use permit time limits, and we're proposing that these be extended to correspond with the tentative maps if the CUP is approved with the plan development. The second one was to expand land use definitions for auto dealers and update the sales lot definition. So that's being done together. Third one would be to clarify the land use description for food and beverage retail sales. And the fourth is to clarify the land use description for personal services. Number five is to expand and update uses allowed in the commercial professional zone. And the last one would be to update swimming pool fencing. So our first code update that we'll look at will be the conditional use permit time limits. And with this, what staff is proposing is to do an amendment to link the CUP with the corresponding tentative map. And this is when it's part of a plan development. So now what we have in Chapter 2 of our code is time limits for conditional use permits. And right now that says that they will expire after 24 months. What we're proposing is to actually link that code section to the tentative map. So if the tentative map is extended either through an application or through an automatic state extension, which has been happening fairly often lately, then the CUP will automatically be extended. What this will do is it'll prevent CUPs from being expired if the map is still active. So you won't have a map that is either recorded or extended and the CUP that has expired. And this will really help the projects because we won't have dormant projects, and then it'll help the city because we'll have an enforceable CUP for the life of the project. And this is the proposed text as shown in your staff report. Our second update is for auto dealers and sales lots. And in this, what we're talking about is a few of the items in currently listed as sales lot uses. It's recreational vehicle sales, recreational and utility trailers, and boats. Those are currently identified as a sales lot. Staff is proposing to move those to auto dealers, and this is because we've had some applications come in recent years where people have wanted to sell boats or RVs on an auto dealer lot, and they've had to go back and amend their CUP. So we think that this code update would actually make it easier for people selling boats and RVs to come in under existing auto dealer CUPs because those uses tend to be pretty consistent. Sales lots tend to be for larger, more intensive uses, farm equipment, commercial trucks, mobile homes, construction equipment, and swap meets. So we felt that that was a different type of use, and so we're proposing to make that change. Our third item will be for food and beverage retail sales. With this, we're proposing to remove where it includes two gas station pumps as an accessory use to food and beverage retail sales, and this is for two reasons. One is because gas pumps are defined under service stations in our code, and those are only allowed in specific zones, so we wouldn't want to be allowing them with every food and beverage retail sales use. And the third is that it's a general plan policy and program to go ahead and do this update because the general plan requires CUP approval for all gas stations. The third land use description update would be for personal services. And this is to add day spas and licensed therapeutic massage to personal services. Currently, personal services are identified as things like beauty and barber shops, saunas and hot tubs, dry cleaning pickup stores, pretty much things that are not medically related. So what we're proposing to do would be to add the day spas and the therapeutic massage to that definition. Currently, massage parlors are identified as a sexually oriented business, which is problematic for beauty shops and day spas that provide licensed therapeutic massage. So we often see spas come in that want to have a masseuse, and the current definition is difficult for them to do that. We're also proposing to remove dating and escort services from personal service, and this will be added into a different definition at a later date. Our fifth update will be to update the commercial and professional zone uses. And the first part of this will be to remove sexually oriented businesses from the commercial professional zone. And this was an inconsistency that staff found in the code. In 2001, the City Council approved a zone change to amend Chapter 16, which is the Adult Oriented Business Ordinance. They adopted a zoning map which specifically identified which properties allowed adult-oriented businesses, and they removed these businesses from the commercial professional zone. However, when the code update was done, they made the changes to Chapter 16 but didn't make the changes to the commercial professional zone list, so it still shows sexually-oriented businesses as allowed in the commercial professional zone. Since the most recent code, which was adopted in 2001, takes precedence, the city attorney has determined that that they are not allowed in the CP zone, and this update would be consistent with the 2001 resolution by City Council. The second part of the CP zone update would be to add hotels and motels as a conditional use in the CP zone. And this is part of EDE's economic development plan for the city. We are trying to promote tourism along Mora Road, and most of the Mora Road properties are commercial professional. We see a lot of offices in this area. And by adding hotels and motels as a conditional use, it would increase the tourist services in that area. And this is the code as it's proposed to be updated. The sixth update would be for swimming pool fencing, and this is for fencing and screening, and it's really just a clarification instructing people to go to the building code requirements and not rely on the zoning requirements of Title IX. Swimming pool fencing is something that's regulated by the building code, and we feel that showing this in the zoning ordinance as a conflicting requirement just isn't consistent. So update would eliminate the conflict. Staff has provided an environmental determination that this is exempt from CEQA, and that is per a section of CEQA which says that since this is not a project and CEQA applies only to projects which have potential to affect the environment, this text amendment would be exempt. These are the findings as shown in your staff report. And tonight, staff is recommending that you approve the zone change as shown in the resolution. There are some alternatives. You can make modifications to the text and make those recommendations to City Council. You may determine that more information is needed and refer the item back to staff, or the Commission may recommend that the City Council deny the project. And staff is available for questions.
Okay, thank you. What I'd like to do is take these one at a time. We'll start with item one and go right on through, and then entertain a motion at the end so that we maintain some continuity. Does anyone have any questions relative to the conditional use permit time limits? Any questions of staff? Commissioner Colomarino.
Yes, thank you. In looking at the language proposed here in for the new subsection E, the last sentence appeared to me to be, let's say, rather infelicitous. So for that reason, I tried to come up with a little bit better language, and I sent that to Warren Frace in an email. But I just think that the language that's there is inadequate. It needs refinement at a minimum. So I think we should address that. I'm talking again about the last sentence of subsection E.
And staff's gone ahead and taken your email and put it in the PowerPoint. So this is the text that you'd sent earlier. And this would replace the last sentence of item E. So this sentence would be removed where it talks about the provision applying retroactively. And this is the text that Commissioner Colomarino has proposed.
Would have been helpful to have this earlier.
So this is just that last sentence that this is. Because what the only thing I had noticed is it looks like a typo instead of is, it should have been of or in, which makes that last sentence completely clear. And so are we then just removing the one sentence and then this whole thing is going in place of that?
That sentence, yes.
Okay.
Yes, there was the typo, and then just the whole sentence itself didn't seem to work. Didn't seem to express the intended purpose in a reliable way from my reading of it. So I came up with this. It's not written in stone or anything, and it's true, Commissioner Jack, I would have, I should have tried to get it earlier. I unfortunately didn't scrutinize this language until late today.
Commissioner Benz?
Yes. Warren, has the city attorney reviewed this?
No, the city attorney hasn't reviewed this revised language.
And what is staff's comment in regard to the language?
We feel that it reads better than actually staff's proposed language, so we wouldn't have any concerns with the commission substituting mm-hmm. that instead.
Thank you.
Any other comments on this?
I have another question, too.
Commissioner Sturdivant?
I was going to say, it's been a long day, and my eyes are kind of tired, so I'm having a hard time reading that.
I am, too.
Could you either read it for us, or I'll just get up there and I'll go stand over there and read it myself.
Sure, sorry.
Thanks.
The last sentence is revised to say, this provision shall apply retroactively, and as a result, any conditional use permit which expired prior to the effective date of this ordinance, but which was approved as part of a planned development with a corresponding tentative map that is still active, shall no longer be considered expired, but shall instead be deemed active and subject to expiration only if and when the corresponding map expires without having been recorded.
Okay.
And I have a copy here for anyone who might want to look at it. Fortunately, I don't have more than one.
Anyone else? Commissioner Schmidt?
So in the future, if the city decides to extend the life of tentative maps, and be it parcel maps or tract maps, or if the state extends the life of a parcel map or tract map, then that would the way this is worded, then those conditional use permits then would be extended accordingly.
That is correct. That is the goal of this text change. The state has approved several recent time extensions where they've extended active tentative maps for 12 months, and we've run into a problem where the corresponding CUP isn't subject to that same extension. So this would link them together and automatically extend the CUP.
And so maps that have time limits that extend beyond the normal 5 years that the state has, because they have had to provide improvements beyond, I think it's $125,000, and those maps automatically get more time than the 5 year period. So that also, those maps, this ordinance would apply to those maps also. So we're talking about the unrecording or the express without having been recorded. So that's the line we're talking about, is the recording of the map or not recording of the map.
We're really talking about the CUP and the code updates. The map, yes, that some maps may be extended longer than the 5 years, but what the code text is really applying to is only the conditional use permit to extend the CUP as long as the map goes. So if the map goes over 5 years, the CUP will also. And if the map records, the CUP will remain active indefinitely.
Okay, thank you.
And any other commissioners? Commissioner Colomarino?
Yes, you said you spoke with the city attorney about this, and you talked with him about this retroactivity provision that's the subject of the last sentence. The reason I ask that is it's highly unusual, let's say, for a permit or something to expire and then to spring back into life. Now, it does happen under the law, and I'm not saying it can't happen, and I'm certainly not an expert on municipal law, and so I would defer to the city attorney's judgment on that, but it does seem like an issue.
Yeah, we have spoken with the city attorney, and he's comfortable as long as it's very specific that that is the intent of the code, that that is all right. We've actually adopted similar language for building permits that went back and retroactively revived permits that technically were expired. We did that last year, and the city attorney signed off on that as well.
Okay. So
thank you.
We're all comfortable with the item as with a recommended change? Okay.
Do we want to take a straw vote?
Does anybody have an objection? Okay. Item 2. The land use description for auto dealers and sales lots. Any discussion on that? Commissioner Colomarino?
Yeah, I just wanted to find out a little bit about the life experience which has led to this proposed change. Has there been some problem arising that, or I shouldn't say problem, but in the city's experience, have auto dealers been coming along and saying now they want to go into selling boats and RVs?
We did get a couple of applications. If you're familiar with the Mitsubishi dealer on San Anselmo, it used to be an auto sales lot. A couple years ago, somebody came in and wanted to do boat sales on that lot, so they had to go and amend the CUP in order to do that. We felt that the use is so similar, but since it specifically says boat sales under sales lots, the city had to require the amendment before they could open their business. So this proposed text amendment wouldn't eliminate that sort of situation in the future. We also got an application for the lot next door, actually for mobile home sales, and we feel that one is different enough, and mobile home sales are different type of sales than auto sales, that would still fall under a separate definition.
Well, on that point, I guess I'm a little confused, because I guess just at first blush, you know, superficially, it seems to me that boats and RVs resemble mobile homes and farm equipment more than they resemble just little autos. Is there something missing here? Because, you know, as I say, just very superficially, the appearance would suggest to me that the RVs and the boats are more in the category of the mobile homes.
Well, in terms of RVs, RVs really aren't defined in the code or in, I guess, the vehicular code. You know, there's a whole range that you can have a small van that's technically an RV up to these trailer bus kind of RVs. So the DMV actually licensed all the dealers the same. So that was one of the problems, is that although they just needed an auto dealer license from the state, we had this distinction where we wouldn't let them sell things that were, quote, an RV, although it's kind of hard to determine what's a van and what's an RV. So clearly, we think it's much better just under the DMV licensing to group RVs under autos, because that's the way the state looks at them. Boats, we feel, just because of their size, they're fairly similar. They're on, you know, licensed trailers typically. They're about the same size as, you know, cars and RVs, so they fit onto an auto dealer lot. The main issues we're looking at is just neighborhood compatibility. Is the site appropriate? Is the site big enough? Is it landscaped well enough? So if you put a boat on there or a car, basically your neighborhood issues are about the same. When you get up into bigger things like maybe farm equipment or mobile homes, there we believe that you may have some different needs and issues just in terms of, you know, buffering and landscaping and compatibility as well. Some of those bigger lots don't want the paved, or larger uses want gravel lots and things like that, which we don't allow for auto dealers. So we think that distinction still makes sense, is to group those very large, more intensive, super heavy equipment under the sales lot, and then anything that's basically on tires that you typically can fit onto a smaller lot, group that under auto sales.
And then if this change is made in the future when considering a conditional use permit for an auto dealer, we'll have to think in terms of the possibility that that auto dealer could have RVs and boats out in the lot as well, right?
Yeah, I think you would just consider that all those are potential uses. And we have had a couple inquiries from RV dealers. This kind of goes back to your previous question about some of the issues we had, but we did have one that was considering a Tascadero, but because of the CUP process and some other things, ended up going to another city. And, you know, we just think would be more competitive with other cities if we just could say, no, you can just open up. You don't need to go through some new process.
Commissioner Benz?
Yes. Warren, I look at this as being a little less onerous and burdensome to and is somewhat business-friendly towards local businesses that might wish to do this. And I think it's a good idea. It most certainly makes sense to me that these uses be combined and be allowed. Thank you.
I have, I'm going to jump in here because I have a personal experience where I've actually bought a boat off a dealer lot kind of thing. So it's not incompatible because a dealer will take almost anything in trade in when it comes to selling a new car. The one caveat I might have on this would be may want to qualify the size of boat either in length or weight or something because some of those boats, not that it's likely to happen here, but it would prevent it. Some of those get pretty big, and even the great big ones can be put on tires and moved around. I really don't think we want the really large-sized boats fitting into the same general category. Commissioner Schmidt?
Yes. I was thinking similarly about trucks. I mean, what would prevent Peterbilt trucks from being sold as a truck, or is that too large or not too large? I don't know. And then I also just wanted to point out that the mobile homes are licensed vehicles. They have license plates, right? Mm-hmm. And so they do somewhat fall under the category of the licensed vehicles that were being discussed, whereas the manufactured homes, which is the use that's up there in that area that you were talking about off of San Anselmo, is different because it doesn't carry the license plate as a mobile home does.
Vice Chair Moreno.
And I'm curious, would something like a tractor trailers, would that fit into there as well?
I believe a tractor trailer fits under heavy commercial trucks. So that is based on the size. It has a one-ton size for sale slots.
Okay. So that would not come under the auto dealers then?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Commissioner Sturdivant?
Yes, in the sales lots definition down below, it does define heavy commercial trucks as being over one ton. So I like the idea of the CUP for the autos being allowed for the RV and boat as well, because it opens up more opportunities, like you were saying about a dealer wants to come in or something like that. But I do have reservations about size, because I was thinking the same thing about when it comes to boats and those kind of things. So, but as for the size of trucks, you know, it's defined right here between sales lots and auto dealers. So that's pretty well specified.
Could we come up with something to regulate the size, maximum size for?
Yeah, let me check on the internet, see if I can kind of find some thresholds maybe that the state or somebody has that would define a vessel size. And then on the issue of mobile homes, I think that is a good one maybe to take a second look at. Mobile homes is kind of an antiquated term anymore. So we probably should replace that with manufactured housing, and then that would clear up the definition problem.
Well, Commissioner Colomarino?
Yes, I had just one additional question, and that is if this is approved, then it will apply to all of the auto operations that are currently in existence here, right?
Yes, that is correct.
A defining line between what should be on a sales lot size-wise and what should be in an auto dealer.
Because it's not unusual on a car lot to sell trucks up as high as 350, which could exceed, or 450,
yep,
which would exceed a one ton. Okay, with that, while Director Frace is working on that, let's go to item number three, land use definition for food and beverage retail sales. Any questions or comments? Commissioner Schmidt?
Yes, I have a concern about Shores downtown. How would this change affect them?
Thank you.
Commissioner Schmidt, just for edification for anyone in the audience and that doesn't know who Shores is?
The gas station downtown across from the Sunken Gardens.
Okay, thank you.
It's our understanding that the gas station downtown is already considered existing nonconforming because it's a gas station that's located within the downtown, and the downtown does not allow for gas stations.
So if they wanted to add, they might have done that a little bit, but if they wanted to get away with the bays that they have there for Auto Works and turn it into a little mini mart, would that be a problem for them?
The food and beverage retail sales part is not a problem, so they can have that use downtown. They can sell food and things like that. They wouldn't be able to expand the service part, the auto service part of the business, because it is existing nonconforming already.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Okay. Let's go to number four, land use definition for personal services. I anticipate a few questions. Vice Chair Moreno?
I'm wondering, you said that this has caused some problems, the massage parlor designation, as it's caused some problems for spas and places that do therapeutic massage. What problems has it caused?
Licenses should be able to be issued. This would actually codify it and make it so that the Planning Commission City Council authorized day spas and licensed therapeutic massage as a personal service.
Okay. And is the term then massage parlor, is there a, and not that I'm asking for it, but is there a specific definition to that so that a business doesn't come in and call it something else and comes in under personal services when really it's what we mean by a massage parlor?
I think we're really relying on the business owner here to classify it. So we have had business owners come in before and specifically say that they wanted to open a massage parlor, and we will tell them that they have to go by the sexually oriented business ordinance.
Okay.
So if that's what they want to call their business, then they are subject to that ordinance. If they come in and clearly want to open a spa or a beauty shop, something that we see often downtown, then we would classify them under personal service.
Okay. And then when we talked a while back about home-based businesses, and I had brought up in-home massage, and you said currently there's no space for that in the ordinance, but that you're looking at that, is that something that would not fall under this? It would remain with the home-based business, and we're not addressing that at this time. Is that correct?
That's correct. That would be different just because the home occupation section is very specific, and it says that clients can't come to a residence. So that would be a separate section of the code.
Okay. And you mentioned here that the dating and escort services are going to be removed from personal services. Where do they go to, or do they disappear?
We really don't see these type of things come in, but it seems inconsistent with this type of a business. We are looking in the future to create a new definition for tattoos, body piercing, and we think that dating escort services might fit better into that definition. We're not creating that definition at this time because we need to work out the zones and where they're allowed and conditionally allowed and spend a little more time with the Planning Commission Council on that. So at this point, it would just be taken out of the code.
So currently, if a business wanted to come in and came to the Planning Commission, came to the city, there would be no avenue for them to open a business then.
Yeah, let's not let it lapse.
It's not that I'm looking to open one, mind you.
No, but it's a good question. Constructed so that there isn't that opening there for something in between the times that something can slide through the cracks on us. So.
Just back to, so if you're then relying on, again, the applicant to be forthright and say, I'm opening a massage parlor and not a therapeutic massage place. Is that just a little bit concerned? I'm all for day spas and massages. I get them. They're wonderful. My concern would be the terminology if someone just comes in and says, I'm opening up a therapeutic massage place type of thingy, and it's not a spa that we're intending. I don't want it to somehow get around the intention of what we're trying to do here.
I think the main difference that we're looking at here is that we're specifically identifying licensed therapeutic massage.
Okay.
So we're really looking specifically at, you know, licensed people that are going into a spa or a beauty shop.
Okay. All right. That's good.
Commissioner Schmidt?
Then would it be appropriate to say that unlicensed massage would then fall under the other category to provide clear definition?
It is the police department's standard to require a license from all for all masseuses.
Well, in consideration with what Commissioner Moreno was talking about, to me, if you know, it's clear that license falls under this category, and then unlicensed falls into the other category. So there's no question about it in that way.
Seems to clarify it.
I think that would be a good way to think of it. Yeah. Our police department does, that is their standard, to always require a license. We haven't had a business come in that didn't have a license before. So it's...
Yeah. And I also have concerns about the language of removing the language that Commissioner Jack talked about within the ordinance and keeping it in place. And I was wondering, what are the findings that need to be made for a director's determination? Interpretation, and that's, you know, your point of view, and obviously it could be challenged up the line, but if it was to go to court, how is it factually based? How do you support that?
Well, staff, the director, would do research on it. We'd generally do some sort of documentation, look at the code, the purpose of the code, similar uses, and try to come up with a good definition or rationale for why we made the decision. That's, of course, appealable to the Planning Commission. Before you could litigate a decision of the Planning Commission, you have to appeal that to the City Council. Obviously, the City Attorney would be involved in that process. So you'd have to exhaust all your administrative remedies before you could challenge, you know, a decision in court.
Yeah, and obviously, we've had not a similar situation, but, I mean, with Diamond Adult World, I mean, that they did that very thing and ended up making their point and settling out and benefiting from it and doing so.
Commissioner Calamarino?
Yes, I just want to pick up on this point that Commissioner Schmidt is talking about, and it's a little puzzling to me to be talking about removing dating and escort services from the personal service definition and then saying, well, if a dating or escort service comes in, the director is going to call it a personal service. I mean, I think it is challengeable, and it just looks strange. If, in fact, your intention is to classify it as a personal service, then it would seem to me we ought not remove it now. And if you come up with another classification for it subsequently that you think is more appropriate, just present it, and then, it can be changed.
Commissioner Benz.
Yes, I'd like to make a comment on the unclassified or unlicensed massage. Your current business license ordinance requires every business to have a current license. Therefore, if it's unlicensed and you find it in existence, you shut it down until they become licensed. Is that not true?
Yes, all businesses do require a business license. Right. I think what we're talking about with the licensed therapeutic massage is that masseuses actually have to go through training and a certain number of hours. I believe it's about 400 hours of training that they have to go through in order to get their license to be a masseuse, sort of like a hairstylist. So that's the license, a masseuse license. So what we're saying through this code is that they're a licensed therapeutic masseuse, so they actually have to go to school and to training. So it's different than just getting their city business license. We actually won't give them a city business license unless they've been through that training and have their license to be a masseuse first.
So a massage parlor could not get a business license unless they had those credentials.
It is our police department's standard to require a license from all for all massage therapists. This would actually put it in the code and say a licensed therapeutic massage person could go into a spa. So it's a little bit different. It's the police department's policy to require it right now. This would actually codify it.
So you are no longer going to have just massage parlors.
It would still be identified under sexually oriented business. The reality of seeing these, we probably
So if it's identified under that, they have to comply with the requirements of that code in regards to sexually oriented businesses.
That is correct.
So why do we even want to address this in this particular report?
Because technically, if you have a masseuse, they could be considered, identifying a massage parlor. If somebody came in and wanted to open a spa that just did licensed therapeutic massage, right now they would be classified under a massage parlor. We have never had somebody come in and just want to do that. Mostly they come in under a beauty shop or something else that's we can classify under personal service. So we've tried to go that route before. But this would actually create a separate definition or a separate section within personal service to clearly say that spas are allowed.
Okay, thank you.
Commissioner Ward?
Yes, I have a basic question. Under personal services, suppose somebody has a personal service and it's not listed here. Does that mean they can't do it in the city?
No, these are really just examples of a personal service. The definition is really the care of a person which is not medically related. So that's really the general definition of personal service. It says related and including the following. So that's where we get beauty shops, shoe repair shops, dry cleaning stores. So that's where we've made the determination before. Masseuses can go into beauty shops because it's the closest thing.
Okay, not to be nitpicky, but shouldn't there be some expression, but not limited to, or something?
Under a separate definition. Okay. Currently, we're not looking at that issue because it will become a much larger thing to deal with. However, psychologists and psychiatrists, those would actually go under medically related services.
Okay. Commissioner Sturdivant?
Yes, just a quick question about the licensed therapeutic massage. Is that state license? Is that where that's licensed?
It is a state license.
All right. Thank you.
Okay.
Commissioner Jack?
Commissioner
Chairperson
Schmidt?
Jack, I'm sorry. Yeah, I just wanted to carry on. How this discussion came up about the licensing was Vice Chair Moreno had talked about when someone comes in and classifies their business and they are saying that they are a massage, a therapeutic massage parlor, but their intent is something else. And so if they say that they're a massage parlor, then they fall under the sexually oriented business automatically. But our discussion had to deal with more of what if someone was to fudge the license, how do we do that, or fudge the application. And this is where the city's saying, well, a person who's licensed by the state most likely is not going to risk their license by lying on it, whereas other people would not. And that's why I was suggesting that then the unlicensed would automatically fall into the other category of sexually oriented businesses.
Licensed by the state.
Right, because we're saying that they do have a license. Whether there's a license for therapeutic massage and then there's a license for other massage. Beyond, because you said the police department requires a license. We're not talking a business license, right?
The police department does do a check on certain types of businesses, unless some of those are including like photographers. Masseuses are considered something that police department requires a license for, fingerprinting, things like that. So technically, they all masseuses do need to have a license.
So a massage parlor would be filled with licensed therapeutic massage therapists?
If somebody came in, that would be what we'd be looking for, and that would be what we would ask for.
Okay, so they all have the same state licensing. It's their intent of what they want to offer and hopefully their forthrightness with it then.
Yes, a lot of it does rely on what the business owner tells the city on as to how they classify their business.
And so currently, as we're adding that, there's...
...in here, because we talked about licensed and unlicensed. Are we staying with the licensed, unlicensed, or are we going to...
They're all licensed.
Okay. Everyone's in agreement? Okay. Any other questions? Commissioner Benz, did you have anything? Pardon? Okay. Commissioner Calamarino?
Just for clarification, I'm not sure I understood the last point exactly. There is license. We say that day spas and licensed therapeutic massage involves offering massage by a licensed masseuse. That's clear. And then there's something called massage parlors, and that's a sexually oriented business, or that's how it's treated. And I assume, therefore, it now will be subject to certain restrictions as a sexually oriented business. If somebody comes in and is offering, this is too unrealistic, but they could have a bunch of chairs that provide massages, you know. Might not be sexually oriented. There'd be no license there. But I think that's too remote a possibility. And if it arose, our director would find the right category to put it in.
Yes,
that's about the only thing I can. That's about the only thing I can think of that would fall with between those two types of massage.
Commissioner Benz.
Having worked for cities in many capacities, there's always an enforcement of every rule and regulation that the city adopts by ordinance. And when business licensing, police, fire, any official that is employed by the city runs across a violation of some code, then there's a follow-up investigation, and if they are truly operating outside of the scope of what they represented, then there's an action taken to bring them into compliance, right? So we don't have to worry about that in this paper. Okay, thank you.
Okay. Are we ready to move on, or let's see, let's go to... I think it's number five. Updates
to go in along Morrill Road, you mentioned. Are there any other significant commercial professional zones that would be affected by this?
There may be a few along El Camino Real, but I'd say about 90% of these are going to be along Morrill Road. Almost all of Morrill Road is commercial professional.
And in any event, this would require a conditional use permit so that it wouldn't be an allowed use that anyone could just put up a hotel any place along Morrill Road. Then they would have to get a CUP, right?
That's correct. It would require a CUP, as it does in most zones. I believe maybe all zones require a CUP for hotels and motels.
Okay. Moving on, Commissioner Schmidt.
With respect to the discussion that the City Council had and the Planning Commission had a few weeks back on the West Front Business District and the hotel site there, and then the laser the use that was there. Now, is that hotel site within this land use zone?
No, that hotel site is within commercial retail, and it's a planned development overlay, so the hotel was permitted with the original project.
Although I heard Commissioner Calamarino talking about the conditional use permit process, are there inherent conflicts along the Morrow Road corridor with commercial professional zones and other zones that could create a conflict like that which was being discussed at the West Front project?
No, in the commercial professional zone, it tends to be primarily office uses. That's what we see most often. And it allows for, of course, some other uses, but offices are the main thing. Since you have offices that are mostly open 8 to 5 or around those type of hours, you're not going to see the conflicts that you did last week with the hotel and the laser tag where they're open till midnight.
Does it extend, this particular category, extend to the Lake Park and Alford Field?
No, the Lake Park is recreation.
Across the street is not commercial professional? Kitty Corner?
I believe across the street, those offices, those are commercial professional. Mm-hmm.
So there could be a conflict at that point. If someone comes in for...
was proposed that would be open later at night. So if a hotel wanted to open near the park, they would have to consider that the park is already there.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Commissioner Colomarino?
Yes, along the lines that Commissioner Schmidt was mentioning, I have some of these concerns, too, about the incompatibility of hotels on various stretches of Morrow Road. But I'm hopeful that the conditional use permit process would provide adequate protection against some kind of incompatible sighting of a hotel there, and that anyone putting in a hotel there or proposing to would, through the conditional use permit, be required to make sure that the scale is right, that they're in the right location, that it's not going to disrupt some other offices or other type of business, and they're not going to bring on a lot of problems for themselves as well. But I hope that the conditional use permit process is adequate for that purpose, and I assume that the staff believes that it is, and that's why they're recommending this.
This also ties in with the City Council's plan for tourism, and I know there's been conversations about changing some of the use along Morrow Road because it ties right in between the city and the zoo, and I think that's one of the reasons that we're going down this road right now. Is that pretty much it?
Yes, it was an 80s economic development plan to add tourist uses in that area, so that adding hotels to that zone would be consistent.
And the CUP process should be more than adequate to control
yes,
it.
Yes, if a hotel came in, we would the Planning Commission could look at all those issues then.
Okay.
Chairperson Jack?
Yes.
And
Commissioner Schmidt?
I just want to carry on a little bit more on this and apologize to everyone. One of the things that kind of concerned me about the West Front project and was the discussion was focused solely on the hotel. I live 300 feet away from that area, and not once during the discussion was it mentioned about the existing residences and the potential impact that the laser facility could have on the houses. It was focused solely on the hotel. And although, as Commissioner Colomarino was talking about the CUP...
Have those kinds of things come up, the unforeseen consequences of a particular action, and all we can do is try and deal with them as best we could. We heard nothing on the West Front project from any of the public, and it didn't come up, as I recall. There wasn't any discussion really about it amongst the commissioners, so... Okay. Can we put this one to bed? Commissioner Colomarino?
One last observation, and that is that certainly we do want to bring in these tax revenues and all, but a consideration also has to be to try to have an orderly and attractive environment. And right now, Morrow Road is not a picture of orderly planning, that's for sure. Hopefully, through this process, it'll be more attention. The conditional use permit process will provide more attention to fitting things together in an attractive and desirable way there.
Okay, let's move on to number 6. which is the swimming pool fencing. Any questions, comments? Everybody makes sense. Okay, then before we go into any motion on this, I'd like to go back to Director Frace and see where we are on item two. Warren, are you ready, or you want me to open it to the public and then come back?
I've got a little bit of information, so
okay.
I can give that to you right now. In terms of boats, it appears that there's four classes of boats that are generally recognized. There's a Class A boat that's 16 feet or less. There's a Class 1 boat that's between 16 and 26 feet. There's a Class 2 boat that's 26 feet to 40 feet. And then there's a Class 3 boat that is 40 feet or longer. So I guess if you wanted to put a limit, potentially you break it between Class 1 and 2. Also, I did some research while I was at it on the truck sizes and stuff. And there are, according to the U.S. Department of Transportation, they classify trucks in 8 weight classes from Class 1 through 8. So Classes 1 and 2.
Number 2 or number 3, this I go from 16 to 26 feet, and then I jump to 40. What? So 26 to 40 is Class 3?
That's Class 2. The first one is A. So you have Class A, then Class 1.
Okay.
1 is 16 to 26, and then Class 2 is 26 to 40.
Okay. 3 is 40 plus. Okay.
So I guess this commission is thinking about the Class 1 and 2 as being the limit. Nothing in excess of 26 feet.
Well, that'd be a Class 1.
That would be Class A and Class 1.
Class A.
Class A and 1. Class 2 is up to 40 feet.
I'm comfortable with Class A.
How big do motorhomes go? Do we want to limit a boat to be smaller than a motorhome?
You get 36, 40 feet.
40 feet, easy.
So if we can have a 40-foot motorhome, are we going to say that boats could only be up to 26, a Class 1?
You have some other intended consequential stuff with a 40-foot boat and the trailer and the size of the trailer that it has to be on, and that as opposed to a motorhome that is self-contained and has its own power source.
Okay.
Is that it? Commissioner Sturdivant?
Yes, the boat placed there on El Camino by Kennedy Club, is what's their limit on there, do you know, when it comes to length?
I don't know. That's one that's been there for a number of years. It would qualify as a sales lot. There'd be no restrictions on the size of boats they sell, although I would guess that most of them probably fall in the Class 1 size. Those motorboats typically are over 16 feet, but probably aren't over 26.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I was just thinking more along the lines of just benchmarking, just seeing where, you know. So, yeah, I like the Class 1, the one range. That seems like that would cover, you know, ski boats and there are some pontoons and those kind of things. It seems like that's a range that would be that could work. Thank you.
Okay.
Chairperson Jack.
Commissioner Schmidt.
I'd like to please have a clarification on the vehicles again. We talked about Class 1, 2, and 3, and cut the break at 4. Where did the larger trucks, the 450s, what category did they fall in?
All right. With that, I'll open it to the public. Is there anyone in the public that wishes to weigh in on any of these items? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the commission. Do we need more discussion, or can we move on to a motion?
I'm ready to make a motion if we're ready.
Please go right ahead.
I move that the Planning Commission adopt Resolution PC 2009-0027, recommending that the City Council introduce an ordinance for first reading by title only to approve PLN 2009-1335, zone text changed ZCH 2009-0155, based on findings. And the changes would be as discussed in 9-3.701 for the land use for auto dealers, that we would limit boats to Class A and 1, and that the break for auto dealers and sales lots on trucks be Classes 1 through 3 under auto dealers, and 4-plus would be trucks. And Section 4, land use definition for personal services, we would keep in the dating and escort services until another land use definition is found.
I would second that, but I think we need to add the text change that Commissioner Colamarino submitted.
Yes,
good
agreed.
Point. Is that, would you amend your motion to include that?
I amend and agree, yes.
Seems that's a long time ago.
So my second stands.
Okay, so we have a motion by Vice Chair Moreno and a second by Commissioner Benz.
If staff could just make a point, since we're splitting the boat definition, we're limiting it to A and 1 under auto dealers, you might want to consider keeping boats under sales lot as well, and then specifying that that would be for Classes 2 and 3, just so that it's clear you can still sell boats in the sales lot.
I would like to amend my motion to include that.
Second agrees.
Very good. Any further discussion? Could I have a roll call, please?
Vice Chairperson Moreno?
Yes.
Commissioner Benz?
Yes.
Commissioner Schmidt?
Yes.
Commissioner Colamarino?
Yes.
Commissioner Sturtevant?
Yes.
Commissioner Ward?
Yes.
And Chairperson Jack?
Yes.
Motion passes 7-0.
Okay.
The way the water is dealt with in our city by having the Mutual Water Company, which is not managed by the city, it's unlike other communities that have, the city does both. And in those situations, the cities have impact fees. And one of the comments that was made, for example, was that a meter could be used in a commercial zone or issued to a use in a commercial zone, and the use that it's issued to could be a business office. However, if the business office closed, there's nothing to prevent a use to move in that has a higher demand on the water. And so there's no control over that. And so I'm wondering, has the city ever considered creating an impact fee program to deal with those issues and help the water company and then help the citizens of the community at the same time, so there isn't this kind of blanket fee for water meters that applies to all uses?
I guess the short answer to that is no, we haven't had those discussions with the water company.
Is it possible to create a water impact fee so that some uses in the commercial area that would have, say, restaurants, whatever, would pay more than a business that doesn't use that much water? Or likewise, the problem that I've been dealing with or have been analyzing is the residential meter. And you have a primary house, you're paying roughly $20,000 for a meter. And if you have a secondary house, you're paying $20,000 for a meter. And so it seems to me that that's a little bit unfair, but an impact fee program could help the water companies so they wouldn't have to have those blanket fees across the board.
Well, impact fees are highly regulated by the state under AB 1600. So there's a certain process we have to go through to set all our impact fees. So because we don't provide water, I don't believe it would be legal for us to collect an impact fee and then pass it along. So I don't, although that mechanism could work in cities where they're the water provider, I imagine that there'd be some legal problems with us trying to do something here, as well as just trying to figure out how we would even try to do it.
Would it be dealt with more as a mitigation fee then, or, you know, that someone's going to
use uses? So I'm not aware that there's a huge problem. The water company's never communicated that to staff, but I guess if that was something, you know, that there was some interest in looking into, we could. It hasn't ever been raised before. The issue of the second meter for the second unit, that is not something the city requires. The city, you know, staff does agree there's concerns with that. I know that came up quite a bit during the housing element discussion. We are proposing some program text to potentially address that issue. We do think that would be a good issue to revisit with the water company, because it obviously is a hindrance to affordable housing and getting these second units permitted legally. So I think that is something that definitely should be looked into further.
Yeah, most definitely. And it seemed that I spoke with John Neal about it, and it seemed to me that there might be a willingness on their behalf to revisit the issue and consider possibly a reduction of the of fees for meters for second uses. And he compared it, I guess, to apartments. The meter fees for apartments are less than for a residence, and that there could be some type of maybe break given there, because it just doesn't make sense to, you know, when someone says that they want to put a second house and you go to the water company and they're being asked for $20,000, $19,000 for the fee, another $2,000 or $1,500 for the meter. You actually could use one meter on a piece of property, but you still have to pay that fee. And so when I want to put a 800-square-foot home on my property, I have to pay $20,000 for a hookup fee. Boy, that just doesn't work. And so this is kind of where that discussion is going from. And it will come up during the housing element, and hopefully, you know, we'll come to a positive resolve.
Is that where we should deal with it?
Yeah, it's definitely going to be on your agenda at your next meeting.
Okay, because he does make a lot of valid points, particularly in a second unit.
Yeah, and there'll be some language there for you to review and make comments on.
Okay, anyone else? Commissioner Calamarino?
Just on this subject, I want to ask, does the city have any direct regulatory authority or control over the water company and its policies, water usage in the city, or any of these things?
No.
So it would only be
sprinkler requirements a couple years ago that required larger meters for residential, and we worked with the water company to make sure that the larger water meter didn't have a higher fee, although that typically was their policy. So we have worked with them in the past, and they have been fairly receptive to working out changes that just make sense.
But it is a private sector nonprofit entity, is that correct?
It is a private company. It's not nonprofit.
It is profit.
All of us landowners own it.
Yeah, you are all part of the water company.
We all profit from it, I guess.
Okay, seeing no other reports, Commissioner Ward?
Yes. This has to do with the effort that the city has made to make the whole building permit process more user and business friendly. I've been an advocate of this just based on my own past experience, and I thought that the city had come a long way. However, last week I was in a barber shop getting a haircut, and the fellow that was in the chair ahead of me was a builder, and he was talking to the barber. And this is really where you find out what's really happening. You don't find it in staff reports. So they were going on, and he was relating some, I won't say horror stories, but very, very bad experience he had with the city. And he went into, you know, details, and I'm listening. And finally, I just chimed in. He was only about 6-7 feet from me, and I said, well, I thought things had gotten better. And he said, quote, no, they haven't. He said, they've been bad for years. And he said, in fact, most of my friends in the building community would rather build in other cities than do anything in a Tuscadero. And I said, well, have they tried to do things recently? He said, yes. So he gave me some examples, and I, after he got out of the chair, I said, well, look, do you have a card? And he said, no. And then the barber pointed out, he said, well, you should talk to Chuck about this because he's on the planning commission. He just clammed up. And he said, look, I don't want to get in anybody's bad list. He said, but I'm telling you, from my point of view, when I'm a builder, they haven't gotten better. Now, I don't know if this is an isolated incident, but it just threw me for a loop. So my only suggestion is someone might spend a little more time in barbershops in other areas. Yeah. And as an example, he said, I thought when I went to the counter that I could get to see somebody, and someone said, no, you got to have an appointment. He says, oh, my gosh, I drove here and blah, blah, blah. They said, well, I guess maybe we can see if we can fit you in. And I thought to myself, good gosh, you know, you only process a couple of building permits a month. You know, this should not be that way. So my suggestion is that, you know, just take a look at it. And if somebody really wants me to follow up, I'll find out who the guy was and see if I can set up a meeting and he can come in without getting on anybody's bad list and tell you what his experiences were, because he related to me and it just sounded unreasonable, some of the stuff he had to go through.
This is, you know, in keeping with what the city council is attempting to do by making changing that image to bringing us to a more business-friendly climate. It's very disturbing to hear those kind of comments.
Yeah, I was very surprised, quite
and,
honestly.
You know, I will make a point to get out and ask a few questions, but if you might see if you can pick up some more information, because I'm sure Director Frace would be more than willing to hear, you know, some comments, and we don't have to shoot the messenger or anybody else, but
that's
provide
right.
the information. So,
well, I don't want to beat it to death, but he mentioned that a lot of the plan checking now is done, you know, being farmed out. And that you don't get a lot. You get inconsistencies between what you're led to believe you need, and then when the paperwork comes down, oh, my gosh, there's a whole list of new things, and it kind of goes on and on. And I thought, boy, that's just like the old days.
Yeah.
So I'll keep my ears open next time I'm in the barbershop and pass them on, but it's my impression that things were just getting a heck of a lot better, because I see a very positive, friendly attitude. It's no longer an adversarial system. So I felt that things were getting better, and I believe they probably have been, and maybe this is just an exception.
Director Frace, during your director's report, could you maybe give us a quick overview of anything that would be germane to the subject. Commissioner Schmidt?
Yeah, I'd like to kind of carry on with this complaint, and then we start asking more specifics about it. It's something that happened 3 years ago or whatever, and they're kind of carrying this grudge, and so they had it then, they still have it now. And we should listen to the public, like you're saying, and trying to find out things. The plan check is an area that actually, with all the cities and the counties, they are going into farming it out, and those plan checks come back, like you were just saying, they're just loaded with stuff, and most of it's just boilerplate, and they normally don't do enough checking to say whether this item has been addressed or not. It's just that you have to respond to it, and so we always kind of joke about it that we create paperwork so they can put it in the files and use it to wipe their bottoms when someone comes in. And you just sometimes have to address it by saying it's not needed for these reasons. But I see a huge improvement with the city, and I also, you know, with our commission and with the city council, a big change in the city and its approach to development in our community.
Yeah, that's been the impression, and we've certainly had feedback to that extent. So I'm surprised. But, again, it basically says keep your ears open and don't jump to conclusions. I have one report or comment follow-up. The letter that we submitted to a city council to take on the sign program and kind of work some of the stuff out on that so that at some point in time when it becomes apparent that we need to address the sign ordinance, the bulk of the work would be done. The long and the short on that one didn't fly. I can remember comment, be careful what you ask for. And there's been a, so anyway, the sign issue right now is basically one of letting sleeping dogs lie. We'll bring it back to life down the road. But in the meantime, the city council did make it possible for me to meet with Warren. And in the context of some of the things that they're doing, and particularly in the context of some of the shorthandedness in that, that maybe we can, there are some things that we can work.
Most development projects have some complicating factor to them, so there's always an opportunity for something to go wrong. So we try to fix those when we find out about them, but if we don't know about them, they can be a little bit hard to get a handle on. And then the plan check piece is something that is becoming more and more difficult just based on the regulations that have come down from the state. We're working off a whole new building code, the I code that came down last year. There's been a lot of changes related to energy efficiency. There's a whole nother energy efficiency code that goes into effect this January that's going to change the standards yet again. There's new efficiency standards for just planting landscaping on commercial projects that goes into effect early next year. The greenhouse gas regulations are all starting to roll out right now. We have all the stormwater requirements from regional board that are coming into effect. So, you know, at a staff level, we're trying to fix things, but for everything we fix, you know, the state usually loads us up with 10 new things. So I can understand the frustration, you know, in the building community that they get longer and longer lists and it gets harder and harder. Staff is, you know, basically, you know, we have similar feelings, but we have no control over the situation. So as these new regulations come down, we're required to enforce these new rules, and that's just an issue. We're going to be actually briefing the council at their next council meeting on some of the new rules that we do see coming down at the next year, just so they're aware of them. But there's more and more stuff coming right now, and there's been no let up from the state in terms of these new regulations.
That must be what all the 4,000 new people that they hired this last year must be dealing with, all these regulations. So, okay.
Potentially.
And I'll leave it alone.
In terms of the housing element, we continued that off of this agenda just because we weren't quite ready there. It will be on your next agenda. Like I said, it's a nice, thick piece of reading material for you, but I think it's going to come together fairly well. A lot of the issues and ideas that came up at that joint session, we've made sure those have been incorporated into it. So there's programs to talk about meters and reduced fees and that sort of thing. So I think that's going to be an interesting discussion for you. In terms of the Walmart project, we are still waiting for Walmart to submit their final plan. They are still looking at the costs of the projects, and they haven't gotten to a final decision where they're ready to submit that. So we're kind of on a weekly conversation with them, checking in, but there's no new news to report at this at the customer service center. So we don't have as many people as we had just a couple months ago, and then we expect Kelly and Callie both to be out on maternity leave here for the next couple months. We're going to be hiring a temporary person to fill in, but we'll be losing two people there and replacing them with one as well. So we're going to be definitely down to a skeleton crew in community development probably for the next couple months or so. So just keep that in mind. And then in terms of the historic City Hall, the restoration, rehabilitation of that building, our architects have submitted what we're calling the deconstruction plans. There's three phases of plans that will be done for the building. The first is the deconstruction phase, where they'll take off all the parts of the building that were damaged by the earthquake. That'll include most of the upper rotunda, all the brickwork, the tile work, all the decorative terracotta. All that's going to come off, be cataloged and stored so it can be put back up. But that's going to be a fairly intensive project that'll start next year. So we're in the review process there, and then there'll be two phases of construction. The first phase of construction will be the work that will be reimbursed by FEMA. Once that's done, then we'll have to have a second phase of construction where we would do the work that the city needs to do that they won't reimburse. So it's kind of a two-step process, but that's required based on all the federal reimbursements and audits that have to go on. But the architect is working quite diligently. We have a huge set of plans for the first phase already in, and right now the schedule is to start the deconstruction sometime next year. So there is definitely progress going on the historic City Hall. And your next meeting is, let me look at the calendar, I think it's September 1st. Yes, September 1st in 2 weeks is your next meeting. And that will conclude my report.
One quick question, Warren, and thank you for your report. Very encompassing. What is the, anything moving on the printery? I you know, read about the mothballing, that kind of thing of,
right now, we are, and we have been for the last year and a half, trying to get the property owner to secure the building. And because it's a historic building, the process of securing it's referred to as mothballing, which basically entails boarding up the windows and securing the doors so that nobody gets in and nothing happens to the building that would, you know, further damage it.
Okay, thank you very much. With that, we're adjourned.